Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Two mysteries coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear Agnes Moorehead star in The Trap on Suspense. Right now, it's Bennett Kilpack as Mr. King, tracer of lost persons, and the case of the girl who flirted, a CBS broadcast from February 3rd, 1944.
Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, is on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Colonel's Toothpaste present Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, one of the most famous characters of American fiction in one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight and every Thursday night from 7:30 to 8 Eastern Wartime, the famous old investigator will take from his files and bring to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. Now, Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, who tonight takes from his files one of his most unusual and most bewildering cases, the case of the girl who flirted. The girl is an art student, gay and beautiful, but just a little too adventurous. It all starts one day in a museum, where Betty March is at work copying a painting, and a charming stranger walks up to say,
"Not bad. Not bad at all."
"Well, I beg your pardon."
"I'd almost say you had signs of talent, young woman."
"Well, I did not happen to ask your opinion."
"If anyone in this town knows painting, it's I."
"I ought to be furious with you."
"Are you?"
"No. Just terribly amused. I like people to be unconventional. Tell me some more, Mr. Whoever you are."
Yes, that's how it started. Now, several days later, we find Mr. Keene in his office talking to a very distressed man, Robert Colby, assistant curator of the Manhattan Museum.
"I tell you, Mr. Keene, nothing's ever happened like this. In all the years since the museum was founded, the girl walked off in the midst of copying a painting. There's no sign of her since."
"Well, let's start at the beginning, Mr. Colby, shall we? First, what is the girl's full name?"
"Elizabeth March. According to her application for a museum permit, she's now 22.
"Go on, Mr. Colby, please."
"Well, lately she's been copying that big painting by Whistler in the American Room."
"Oh, you mean the portrait of Mrs. Farmington and her daughters?"
"Yes, that's right. Now, the last time I saw Betty was 4 days ago, Monday."
"Betty, eh? You're on familiar terms."
"She's lovely, Mr. Keene. Charming, spirited."
"Well, now, under what circumstances did you last see her?"
"I dropped into the American Room, where she was copying the Whistler painting, to ask her to lunch. She looked up from her easel and said..."
"No, Mr. Robert Colby. No can do."
"Why not?"
"Too busy, Bob. Oh, that man Whistler."
"Has he insulted you, Betty?"
"Why did he always have to sign his paintings with those complicated little butterflies in one corner? I'm having an awful time trying to copy it."
"Oh, forget the butterflies, Betty, and come to lunch. I have a question to ask you."
"Oh, yes. I know. Dum, dum, da-dum."
"Well, will you marry me?"
"No, Mr. Robert Colby, assistant curator of the Manhattan Museum. I will not marry you."
"What's wrong with me?"
"Nothing at all. That's the trouble."
"I don't understand."
"You're just too darn correct to be alive."
"What?"
"The man I'm going to marry will have to be somebody exciting. Somebody dashing. Somebody dangerous."
"Oh, now, stop talking like a Greenwich Village bohemian."
"See, you are a stuffed shirt. Still want to take me to lunch, Mr. Colby?"
"No, I do not, Miss March. Goodbye and good luck."
"Well, yes, she certainly is a very spirited young woman, isn't she? What happened next?"
"Well, I came back in the afternoon, Mr. Keene, to make up. Her easel was still there in its usual place, but no sign of Betty. So that night I went to her apartment. Still no luck. Again the next day and the day after. This morning, finally, I talked to the attendant in the American Room."
"Did the attendant have anything to report?"
"Great deal. After our little spat, Betty sat down at her easel to work again on the butterfly signature. A few minutes later, a tall, dark-haired man came by. He sat by Betty's easel. The next thing the attendant heard Betty say something like this."
"I like people to be unconventional. Tell me some more, Mr. Whoever you are."
"I've seen you here many times before."
"And I've noticed you."
"Oh, have you?"
"First time was in the Egyptian room. we bumped into each other in the tomb of the pharaoh.
I said, I beg your pardon, miss.
And I said, I beg your pardon, sir. Yes, something more. From where my easel stands, I have a very good view of the Italian room next door.
And?
You have been observed on 3 different occasions standing there in front of the Annunciation of Perolini.
Your spies have been busy.
You admire the Annunciation very much, don't you?
There's another work I admire even more. A 20th century masterpiece. You.
Wonderful. Who are you, anyhow?
Just the man who wandered into a museum and saw a very beautiful girl.
No, seriously.
I could tell you better over lunch.
Oh, lunch?
Please.
Well, I don't think I ought to give in so easily. Argue with me 5 minutes more.
And did they finally go off together, Mr. Colby?
Yes. After Betty finished up a few more details on the painting. Well, what do you think of it, Mr. Keene?
Well, frankly, I don't like the sound of it. It wouldn't be the first time a girl was lured into something very unpleasant by a charming stranger.
Then please, Mr. Keene, try to find her.
I most certainly will, Colby. And as a first step, tell me, is Betty's easel still standing there in the American room?
Exactly as it was the last time she used it.
Then take me there, at once.
There you are, Mr. Keene.
Judging from this painting, Betty's a very talented girl.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Did she usually place her stool in just this spot?
Yes, it gave the best light.
One moment.
What is it, Mr. Keene? Why are you staring so hard at Betty's copy?
I wonder if there's a magnifying glass handy.
I'll have the attendant get one. Oh, Billings.
Yes, Mr. Colby.
Look into Mr. Vanderhoff's office, please, and ask him if I could have a magnifying glass for a moment.
I'll be right back, sir.
Mr. Keene, you've got me up a tree. First, you were talking about the position of the stool.
And yes. In fact, I am going to sit down on it right now and make a little investigation.
Well?
Observe one thing. From this position, Betty at all times had a view through that open door into the next room.
The Italian room?
Oh, there comes the attendant now with that magnifying glass.
Here you are, sir.
Thanks.
Let me have it at once.
Right. Oh, what are you looking for, Mr. Keene?
I'm looking for a... By Jove, I found it.
What is it?
Colby, I was impressed by one thing. You told me how Betty went off with a stranger. But she stopped first to finish a few details. Asked for 5 more minutes to paint.
Yes, yes.
Now take this glass.
Yes, I have it.
Turn it on the butterfly signature in the corner. Concentrate on those very fine strokes in the wings.
The wings? Yes, I see it now. Dear Bob, studio tea room.
She had a feeling she might be in danger. That message was just in case she didn't come back.
Well, of course, but why? What danger?
You know that restaurant?
Yes, it's a hangout for artists in Greenwich Village.
Let's go. Let's go as fast as we can. And I take it, Miss Grudy, that you are the owner of this restaurant?
Yeah, that's right.
Do you happen to know Miss Betty March?
Of course. She ate here often.
I wonder if you remember her coming here last Monday for lunch.
Well,
Don't mind me, please. This isn't a case of a jealous lover.
Well, in that case, yes, she came in with a tall, handsome man and took a table near the cash register here. The reason I remember so well...
Yes, Miss Goody?
Well, after an hour or so, the place was clearing out, and I heard Betty say...
Well, thanks for a very good lunch and some grand conversation.
You're not going already.
You've got to. Back to the museum. Back to work.
Silly idea. Why don't you come along to my place instead? I'll show you some of my own work.
Well, it's very kind of you, but I couldn't, really.
Would that be too unconventional?
Well, I...
Just a while ago, you were talking about how you loved adventure. Well, I'm going to hold you to that.
Please. Let go of my arm.
Oh, no, you're coming along with me. Even if I have to kidnap you, darling.
Let go of me. I'll scream.
If you do, I'll put my hand over your mouth and gag you, dear.
Help!
You see, darling, it doesn't help. Better come along quietly now. That's a good girl. That's a good girl.
And then what happened, Miss Goody?
Well, there was a car at the curb, and He took her inside and drove off.
Great Scott, why didn't you stop him?
Oh, well, you know these artists. I thought it was all in fun.
Miss Crudy, did you get the license number by any chance?
No, there didn't seem to be any reason.
Well, thank you anyhow.
Well, not at all. I hope the poor girl hasn't come to any harm.
Gone. Vanished completely.
I'm afraid so, Colby.
What do we do now, Mr. Keene?
Now we play another hunch.
What do you mean?
Tell me something, Colby. What is the most valuable painting your museum owns?
Oh, one that I mentioned before, the Annunciation by Rinaldo Perlini.
Well, if you want my advice, remove it from the wall at once.
What?
Have it examined by the best technical expert on your staff. Do that, and I think I can still find Betty March.
Vanderhoff, how's it coming?
Do not disturb me. I will be finished in a moment.
He's experts, Mr. Keene. He's been at it all morning.
Oh, calm yourself.
How can I, when Betty may be in danger of her life? This seems a very roundabout way of finding her, Mr. Keene, if you'll pardon my saying so.
But it's the only way I know.
Here's Vanderhoff now. He's finished.
Come in, gentlemen.
Thank you.
There's the painting. Look at it, gentlemen.
A magnificent work of art, as far as the eye can tell.
Tell us, Mr. Vanderhoff, what did you find?
First, Mr. Colby, in accordance with my usual routine, I subjected the painting to an X-ray examination. I followed this with a spectroscopic analysis.
Yes, yes.
Finally, I tested minute portions of the pigmentation for chemical content.
Well?
Gentlemen, I am compelled to report that this masterpiece is a fake.
What?
Very skillful, but a fake.
Impossible.
It is a fake, entirely so. The original has been stolen, this copy substituted in its place.
Exactly what I thought and feared.
The man who did this is one of the most skillful copyists alive.
What type of paint did he use?
Oh, tempera, of course. The same as the original. Oil paint did not come into use until several centuries after Perolini. I must report this to the director at once.
One moment, please, Mr. Vanderhoff.
Yes, Mr. Keene.
You may also tell the director that I'll do everything in my power to recover the stolen original.
Good, good.
And that I strongly advise against any publicity at the moment.
I will tell.
Mr. Keene, two things aren't really connected.
Of course they are. Betty's disappearance and the theft of the painting are one and the same case.
But how? How?
Well, here's my theory, Colby. The men who stole the Perolini are cautious, methodical people. They must have worked for months to prepare their fake painting. After that, it was only a question of finding the right moment to snatch the original from its frame and substitute the copy.
Yes?
They decided, of course, to do it on a Monday, when there are few visitors in the museum.
Yes, that's the day we charge admission. Usually only students are present.
But that still left one obstacle. Betty. You remember I told you that from where she sat, she had a good view of the Italian room at all times? A perfect view of the painting to be stolen?
Yes.
Well, that's where the charming stranger came in. He was assigned to lure Betty away and keep her away.
But why are they still holding her?
It's my guess that she'd seen the man admiring the Annunciation just a little too often. She knew something was up. And at lunch with the charming gentleman, she probably gave herself away.
Poor kid.
So then she had to be held prisoner until the painting was safely disposed of. Sent out of the country, perhaps.
But what do we do now?
Yes. What do we do now?
Mr. Keene, you're supposed to be an investigator, not an echo.
My dear fellow, I assure you I'll do everything possible.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Give me a moment. Let me... Colby, your expert just said that this fake painting was very skillful. But like the original, it was painted in tempera.
It fooled me.
Correct me if I'm wrong. But there must be very few painters alive today who could do work like that in tempera.
A few dozen, that's all, Mr. Keene.
All right. I have an assignment for you. Because it takes an art expert.
Yes?
And if you don't come through, and if this doesn't find Betty, I don't know what will.
Fire away, Mr. Keene. What's my assignment?
Dig up all the catalogs of recent art exhibitions that you can find. Go back 10 years if necessary.
Yes, yes.
But get me the name of every outstanding artist in this country who paints in tempera.
I will.
Somewhere in that list will be the man who did that fake Perolini. We'll check over the entire list. By process of elimination, we'll find the forger and the gang that abducted Betty March.
Right. Get to work at once.
Now, as the clock strikes midnight, we find Mr. Keene with his assistant, Mike Clancy.
Well, Mr. Keene, I do hate to be breaking into your house at such a late hour, but here are some nice names Mr. Colby's dug up.
That's quite all right, Mike, and thank you.
And you should have seen the pile of catalogs he's going through. Sure, he was still at his desk when I left the museum working like a beaver.
Oh, Colby is still at the museum?
That's right, sir.
Mike, I suddenly feel another of my hunches coming over me.
Well, out with it, boss.
Something tells me that that stolen painting is still within the walls of the Manhattan Museum.
No.
It's easy enough to get a bundle into a museum, but taking one out...
Oh, you mean that once they copped the painting, they couldn't get it past the door?
Yes, and for days now, they may have been keeping it in a place that they prepared for just such an emergency.
But where?
In the other part of the museum that this charming stranger used to hang around in. The Egyptian room. The tomb of the pharaoh.
In a tomb?
That's where we're going, right now.
Oh, no, boss. Among the mummies at midnight? Oh, no, sir.
Well, here it is, Mr. Keene. The tomb of King Mentop the Fourth.
Well, thank you, Colby. This switch turns on all the lights inside.
That's right.
All right, you stand by at the door. Mike and I will have a look inside.
Okay, Mr. Keene.
Come on, Mike.
Good luck.
Oh, boss, there's 100 other places I'd rather be than in an old cemetery like this.
Don't worry. There's plenty of light in here.
But all these narrow, winding alleys. Plenty of spaces for spooks to be hiding.
Here, Mike, to the left. This should lead to the central chamber and the sarcophagus of the king.
The what, sir?
A stone casket where the mummy lies. I'd like to move the lid and have a look inside.
Well, I wouldn't.
Relax, Mike. Here's the central chamber now, and the sarcophagus.
Saints preserve it.
Come now. Let's try the lid.
Stand back! Don't move!
Glory be. The mummies are talking.
No, Mike. Mummies don't talk English.
Stand back. Hands over your head.
It's coming from that doorway on the other side.
Quick, let's get after it.
Boss, the lights are gone out.
Quick, turn on your flashlight, Mike. Oh. Help! He's trying to strangle.
I'll fix him. Come away, you. Here, I got him, boss. No, he's broken away.
Your flashlight. Turn it on.
Oh, I dropped it somewhere. Here it is.
That's better.
Boss, he pretty near slashed the coat off your back.
Look what he left behind on the floor, Mike.
10-inch knife.
Now we know we're up against killers. But don't let's waste time. Help me move the lid of that sarcophagus.
Okay, sir. You ready now? Hee-ho! Hee-ho!
All right, Mike. Now flash the light inside.
Why, boss.
It's there, Mike. The painting. But we've still got to find the girl. And she's in the hands of killers.
Here you are, Mr. Keene. I've narrowed the list of tempera painters down to a half dozen possibilities.
These are all experienced artists, all over 40?
That's right. I wish I could have stopped that fellow when he came tearing out of the tomb last night. Would have been a quicker way of finding Betty, if ever we're going to find her.
Oh, never mind such talk. The next step, let's find out everything we can about the 6 men on this list. Anything that indicates shady activities in the past.
Right.
And let's hurry, because now that gang is desperate.
Betty?
Oh, there you are.
Tyler is the name.
Whatever you call yourself, why are you keeping me in this house? When are you going to let me go? You have the painting. What more do you want?
Correction, my dear. A certain busybody got it away from me last night at the museum. A Mr. Keene.
Well, good for him.
No. Bad for you, my dear.
Why? Why?
You see, I have two careers at once. Sometimes I borrow, shall we say, valuable paintings from museums with the help of my colleague, Mr. Bruno Carson, who paints excellent substitutes. Most of the time, I run a very respectable gallery on 57th Street.
You're afraid that now I'll give you away.
Mr. Carson is also worried. He's not always a forger, you know.
Let me go, and I'll never mention this to anybody. The museum has its painting back, and that's all it cares about.
Correction again. The police and that man Keene will move heaven and earth to track us down. A very smart old billy goat.
I don't care. This has gone far enough. You can't keep me a prisoner here forever.
That's right, my dear. See you later.
Get me out.
Let me out! Please, I beg you, let me out!
No use. No one will hear you.
Tyler.
Okay, Carson, I'm coming.
Look, Tyler, we can't keep her here much longer. Some people are coming tomorrow to look at my painting.
All right, Carson. She goes tonight.
And don't leave any traces.
There won't be, Carson. Not for the East River right outside the door.
The river? Too bad. She's so nice looking.
Yes. Too bad.
Well, Mr. Keene, that reduces the possibilities to two. Does this fellow Haverford Jones...
What trouble was he in, Colby?
He once tried to swindle an estate out of a very valuable Van Gogh. Mm-hmm. Also, there was once talk of some forgery.
Very promising lead. Now the other fellow.
He got into a different sort of trouble. Bad checks.
And his name is...
Bruno Carson.
I see he lives over by the East River.
Yes, but Haverford Jones seems more likely. The forgery angle.
All right. We'll try him first.
Let's go. There's no time to lose.
No. Something tells me to try Carson first.
I don't think Carson
would... Why would a successful painter like he is live in a dismal place like the East River waterfront?
Well, perhaps he likes to do river scenes.
That's just the point. These catalogs show he's never done anything but portraits.
But, Mr. Keene,
Pick up that phone, Colby. Get me the harbor police right away.
All clear, Carson?
All clear, Tyler. The cop on the beach just walked up the block.
Here. Help me carry her out on the pier.
She's not going to start screaming.
No chance. That gag is on good and tight. She's bound hand and foot.
Okay. Let's go.
Straight ahead now. Onto the pier.
Maybe this isn't such a good idea. We could just beat it somewhere.
Run away from the cops the rest of our lives? No, sir.
Okay.
All right, here we are. Get ready to swing.
Stop where you are. Hands up.
It's that fellow Keene.
Drop her, Tyler. Let's run for it.
Stop where you are. I'm warning you.
Mr. Keene.
What is it, Colby?
Look, Betty's falling off the pier.
She's fallen into the water.
I'm going in after her.
I hope he makes it in time. The harbor police. They've got those men. But not for murder, I hope.
Mr. Keene, wasn't Bob wonderful, the way he went in after me?
You certainly owe your life to him, Betty.
Yes, to a stuffed shirt.
Why, Bob, whoever called you that?
You did when I asked you to marry me.
Oh, darling, will you ever ask me again?
Well, Betty, will you marry me?
You bet I will.
Betty. Mr. Keene, I don't think we've properly thanked you.
Colby, my dear fellow... This is no time to stop to thank anybody.
Listen next week at the same time when Mr. Keene brings us his next missing persons case. The case of the boy who used big words. Every girl and woman knows that in order to be popular today, one of the most important things she needs is an attractive smile. A smile that reveals clean and sparkling teeth. And to the man in business, teeth that make a good impression are just as important, too. If you're not certain that your own teeth are as attractive as they should be, here's something you'll want to know. The new Colonos high-polishing toothpaste does wonders in helping to remove those dingy surface stains, helps reveal the natural brilliance of your teeth, that adds so much to the charm and personality of your smile. I'll tell you why it does it. Its action on teeth is like that of a jeweler's polish on tarnished silver. So start using Colonos, a high-polishing toothpaste yourself right away. You can get Colonos, K-O-L-Y-N-O-S, Colonos toothpaste at any drugstore tonight. This is Larry Elliott saying goodnight for the makers of Colonos toothpaste and Mr. Keene.
And this is Mr. Keene with one last word. I've been asked to bring to your attention the important fact that our country is still faced by a critical shortage of tires for civilian use. The tires you have now must last you indefinitely. Do not be misled by announcements that huge quantities of synthetic rubber are being made. They are, but they are required for military use. So do everything you can to make your tires last as long as possible. Drive only when necessary, at under 35 miles an hour. Keep your tires properly inflated and inspected. Recap your tires as soon as they need it, and share your car with others. Good night, and thank you all.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 3rd, 1944, a CBS broadcast. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. You're listening to Tuned to Yesterday, and now another CBS production of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, It's Suspense, with a Virginia Myers story, The Trap, heard on June 16, 1949, featuring Agnes Moorehead.
Now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present Suspense.
Tonight, Autolite brings you Miss Agnes Moorehead in The Trap, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder.
This the attic?
Since it's at the top of the house directly beneath the roof, what else could it be? Yes, this is the attic.
Yeah, it seems kind of dead in here.
My father used it for a studio when he was alive. It's soundproof. Sometimes he slept here.
Anybody sleep here now, Miss Crane?
I told you I lived alone. Alone. A-L-O-N-E. I've lived alone ever since my sister... Must you ask such stupid questions?
Anything missing or changed in this room?
If there were, I'd have mentioned it. You've asked the same question about every room from the basement up. One thing is certain.
Well, one thing is certain. It ain't burglary, Miss Crane.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. And I agree. Since nothing is missing, it ain't, as you say, burglary. Really, now, I never knew such intelligence.
Take it easy, Miss Crane. Just try to relax.
Don't tell me to relax, please. I'm awakened in the middle of the night by someone whistling in a house I believe to be empty, except for myself. And I call the police, and what's the upshot of it all? Two incompetents clumping about urging me to relax.
You sure you heard whistling? You sure?
Are you trying to tell me I was dreaming?
We ain't... We're not trying to tell you anything, but what we've got to try to discover is if there's a possible explanation. Now, right now, we find no sign of breaking and entering, no sign of burglary, no
problem. I tell you, I heard it.
Anything like this ever happened before?
No. But this evening, when I was preparing dinner, there was a muffin missing from the bread box. I know I didn't eat it myself. And the clock in the hallway when I was leaving for work yesterday, I noticed it had stopped, and I made a mental note to wind it when I returned, but when I came home, it was ticking away as if it had been... Why did you look at each other like that? Do you suspect me of harboring delusions? Do you think I'm a crank?
Well, no, of course not. You don't think Miss Crane here is a crank, do you,
Lana? Oh, don't try to humor me. I tell you, all these things happen.
Well, you're not trying to humor me.
Oh, you are, you are. But they did happen. Someone ate my food, wound my clock, walked through the house whistling. It's as though someone were living here with me. When they had gone, I thought of the house. The honeycomb of rooms and connecting closets upstairs. No one could be found up there, not if they didn't want to be. It would be easy to stay hidden, to slip from room to closet to room. I hurried to my bedroom and bolted the door and clamped the windows down to the sills, and then I lay in bed and listened. And listened. And suddenly it was morning and I'd overslept.
Careful, Miss Crane. You almost knocked me right off the porch.
Sorry, I didn't see you. I'm late.
Rush. Everybody these days seems to be in such...
I overslept. Is there any mail for me?
Nope. I'd be out of a job if everybody got as few letters as you do.
I dare say you're right. I really
must... Not so fast. Something I got to explain to you.
Hey, Eddie, got anything for me?
Yeah, quite a few. Be right with you, Mr. Holmes.
Snap it up, will you? I've got to catch the train.
I'm very late.
This'll only take a second. Now, here, let me show you. Now, you filled out this part all right.
What?
But...
What is this?
The Form 22 you left in your box for me. Order to change address. You filled out this part all right, but right...
Order to change address? What are you talking...
These lines are filled out okay. Name, old address, and new address. But is that Thomas Cook and Son, Paris, France, or Thomas Coke and Son, Paris, France?
Well, it says Thomas Cook and Son, but I never...
Just a second, Mr. Holmes. I'm showing Miss Crane how to fill out a change of address card.
Where's she going? Where are you going, Miss
Kitty? I don't understand. I never filled out.
I said, where is she going?
Paris, right
here. I didn't put this card in the mailbox. I don't know
anything
about it.
Eddie, do I get my mail today or do I?
Yeah, just, anyway, you forgot to write your signature down here at the bottom, Miss Crane, and unless you do that, your mail won't be forwarded. You understand?
No, I don't understand. I didn't fill out this card. Oh, there's my bus. Oh, here, give it to me. I have to run.
Well, if I don't see you again, Miss Crane, have a nice time.
On the bus, I examined the change of address card. The information it required had been typed, but not by me. I was sure of it. Not by me. By whom, then? I looked at the card again. The crossbar on the capital T was lopsided, and all the E's were out of line, slightly higher than the other letters. There couldn't be two typewriters with two such defects together. There could only be one. Suddenly, I felt sick to my stomach. There was only one typewriter like that, and I knew where it was. On the desk in my living room. I worked like an automaton all day, going through the usual routine of a physician's secretary. But my mind was not in the office. It was at home, following the intruder in my house from room to room. Now in the kitchen, now in the library, now perhaps in my bedroom, smiling a bleak, faceless smile and planning to what? Something dangerous? Something dangerous.
Helen. Helen.
Huh? Oh, yes, doctor.
Yes, doctor. Now relax, Helen. We're alone. It's time to close shop.
What?
Time to go home. What is it, Helen? Are you ill?
No. No, Well, it's just that I didn't get much sleep last night. I was awakened by someone whistling in my house.
What?
Yes, around 3 this morning. I phoned the police and they searched, but they weren't really looking. They didn't believe me. But I heard it. I heard it distinctly. I even recognize the tune.
Oh, relax, kid, relax. Now, come on now. You recognize the tune?
Yes, I recognize. Aloha, you know. Farewell to thee, farewell to thee. Come. Why do you smile?
Helen, if you came to me with this story as a patient, I'd prescribe a vacation. You want one so badly. You even dream you're about to go off on one. To Hawaii, no less. Complete with musical background.
Oh, how can you be so stupid? I'm sorry, Perry, but it's infuriating to be told it was a dream when I know that there are things happening in the house that frighten me. Last night, there was a muffin missing from the bread box. And
You probably ate it.
Oh.
Now, everyone has had similar experiences. Now, many times I find a cigarette smoking in my hand. And I have no recollection of having lit it, you see?
Oh, and the clock? It was run down, and then it was going again, and I hadn't wound it?
It may not have been run down.
Oh, it...
Now, a gear may have jammed for a few minutes or something like that.
And this morning, the mailman told me about it.
Now, Helen, now, please listen to me. It seems to me that you're in a bad state of mind. You're finding dark omens and bloody portents in normal, everyday occurrences. Now, you're being neurotic about these things. You're like Chicken Little running to tell the king the sky is falling. Now, you go on like that, and pretty soon they'll come and wrap you in a cold, wet sheet.
You think I'm losing my mind. Hmm? You do.
No, I was only kidding. Say, are you still living alone in that big old barn of a house?
Yes, and it's not a barn. It's a perfect...
Okay. You're alone too much, Helen. How long has it been now since...
2 years. Jessica's been away almost 2 years.
Well, it was all right for you when she was there. I mean, she was a lively kid. She filled the house with excitement and energy.
And necking parties and drinking and great hulking boys following her around. It was disgusting. A lively kid. She was wild and a cheat and a liar
now
and everything else.
Stop it, Helen. I've no desire to rake over old coals. I'm only offering you sound advice. It's not good for you to remain in that house all by yourself. Now, why not rent out part of it? The whole upstairs, say. Fill the place with people and...
No, I don't want people in my house. It's my house now, and I like it the way it is.
Okay. Can I give you a lift?
No, thank you.
Right. Helen, if you don't like the idea of renting part of your house, why not close it entirely for a while and take a vacation? I recommend that as a doctor, even though it'll be tough getting along without you. Now think about it, will you? Think about it.
On my way home, I thought of what Perry had said. It was possible I'd been morbid about the whistling and the rest of it. It could be. As I walked down the street toward the house, I looked at it. And its familiarity was reassuring. This was no place of fear and mystery. This was my home, and there was no intruder, and really never had been.
Miss Crane?
Oh. Who is it?
It's me, Miss Crane, Harry Penning, Penning's Luggage Shop. Did I scare you?
Oh.
I'm sorry. Where's your porch light? I'll put it on.
Oh, it's at the left of the door.
See, it's me. I don't blame you for being scared, a voice coming out of the shadows like that.
Well, what do you want, Mr. Penning?
I brought the two valises you ordered.
The two valises I ordered?
Uh-huh. It was on my way home anyway, and I figured, well, I'll just put them in the car.
Well,
I didn't order
any valises.
Well, sure you did. This afternoon, don't you remember? You said you wanted a big one and a little one. Leather, high grade.
I ordered them. I did?
Yes, I took the order myself this afternoon.
But I didn't. I was nowhere near your shop.
Oh, well, you telephoned. You said you were going on a vacation soon and you wanted to have...
No, I didn't.
One of us is crazy, Miss Crane.
Crazy?
Well, when I say crazy, I don't mean crazy, of course. Excuse me. I mean, well, I know you ordered them and asked me to have them delivered.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. I remember now. Two valises.
Yeah, that's it. I guess in the hustle and bustle of getting ready for a vacation, a thing like this could slip your mind.
Yes, it slipped my mind.
Yeah, well, now, you want to pay me now, or should I send you a bill?
Yes, send me a bill.
Yeah, well, have a nice time, Miss Crane. Believe me, I sure envy you. I sure do. I'd like to change places with you.
I carried the valises into the house and set them down in the hallway and stood there staring at them. Perry said I had dreamed of a vacation. Had I? And had I put a change of address card in the mailbox and ordered these valises? Either I was losing my mind or I'd been right all along. Was there someone in my house? Someone who not only wanted to live there, but who also wanted me out? I was in an agony of confusion and indecision. And then Oh, no.
Information.
The telephone number of the Daily Times. Hurry, please.
The editorial office or the business office?
The classified ads department.
That number is listed in your directory.
Yes.
The number is Avalon 1634. Daily Times Classified. May I help you?
My name is Helen Crane. I want to put an ad in the for rent column. Five bedrooms, share bathrooms, low rent, inspection after 6 p.m. The address is 1132 Duralamon. I want it to run every day until further notice.
All right. Shall we bill you at that address?
Yes. Will that be in tomorrow's Times?
Yes, it will.
Oh, thank you. There! Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Do you know what that means? It means this house will soon be filled with people. There'll be people living here. Eating here, sleeping here, crowding you out. There'll be no room for you, do you hear me? I know you want me to leave, but I'm not going. You are! You are! You are! You are! You are! That night was deep and refreshing, and I awoke next morning and went to the office feeling very pleased with myself. By noon, the Times would be on the stands with my ad. I might have tenants by tonight. After that, goodbye, unwanted guest. Good morning. Dr. Coleman's office.
I'd like to talk to Miss Crane.
Speaking.
This is the Hughes Lock and Key Company, Miss Crane. About that padlock you ordered.
Just a minute. What did you say it was I ordered?
Padlock, the one you ordered yesterday. This is Miss Crane, ain't it? Miss Helen Crane?
Yes?
Well, I think we located the kind you wanted. Believe me, it was a job doing it. In the first place...
The intruder wanted
the
padlock?
No more.
Why? How did the padlock enter the scheme to force me out of the house? For a moment, I was frightened. Then I realized it didn't matter. I'd already taken steps to ensure my remaining. My house would soon be filled with people.
Do you want me to bring it over to the house now or later?
Now, if you like.
Will there be somebody there to let me in?
Oh, yes, yes, somebody's there.
Okay, Doc. Thanks, Miss Crane. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Padlock. Why a padlock? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter now. At noon, I left the office and went down to the lobby for a newspaper. The Daily Times, please.
Here you are. Thanks.
Hello, Helen. You want your lunch hour?
Yes, Perry.
Anything requiring my immediate attention up there, or have I time for a bite?
Oh, you have time.
I'll join you if I may.
Just a moment, Perry. I'm trying to find something in the paper.
Where should we go? The coffee room here, all right with
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that'll be all right.
Or would you prefer to go up the street to the Italian place?
Perry! Perry, it's not there. It's not in the paper. They told me it would be, but it's not.
What is it?
Have you got a nickel? I want to make a call.
Sure, Helen.
I'll be right out.
Daily Times Classified. May I help you?
This is Helen Crane. Why isn't my ad in the paper?
Did you place an ad with us, ma'am?
Yes, I did, over the phone last night, but it's not in there today. Why didn't you run it?
Well, just a second, ma'am. I'll check it with our phone orders. Was it supposed to start today?
Yes, yes, it was.
Well, I have it here now. I remember. I took it myself. Helen Crane,
yes?
1132 North Duralman.
Yes?
Well, the ad did not appear, ma'am, because shortly after it was placed, it was canceled.
What?
Canceled. The notation on the slip says that shortly after it was placed, it was canceled. Also by telephone. Hello? Hello?
Thank you.
Are you all right, Helen? Helen, are you all right?
What is it, Helen? What is it? Do you feel ill?
Oh, I'll go upstairs and lie down for a few minutes.
You won't do anything of the sort. I'm sending you home in a cab right now. Now, you get into bed as soon as you arrive and phone me if you have a temperature. I'll try to drop in to see you first thing in the morning. And, Helen, I...
Yes, yes.
Oh, I wish you'd give some thought to taking that vacation.
There was no mystery about it, really. The intruder had overheard me placing the ad, that was all. Phoning in a cancellation was a simple matter. My head hurt. I tried to think what to do next, but my mind wouldn't work, and I was sick to my stomach. Finally, the cab pulled up in front of my house. My house.
Want me to help you to the door, miss?
No, I can make it. Thank you.
Miss Crane!
Oh, yes. What is it, Mrs. Hall?
Are you busy? May I speak to you for a minute?
What is it?
Well, I wanted to have a few words with you before you went on your vacation. My husband told me you were going to France. I certainly envy you, I do. And we had a talk, the mister and I.
What is it, Mrs. Hall?
Well... We were wondering what you intended to do about the house. It's really none of our business, of course, but then again, we decided no harm to ask, is there? We'd like to know if you intend to put it up for sale, because if so, we'd like to consider buying it. The mister sometimes dabbles in real estate.
Sell it? Sell my house?
Well, that's what we'd like to know, whether you're going to or not. I spoke to Jessica about it this morning.
Jessica?
And
you spoke to Jessica about it? Jessica?
She said she didn't know what your plans were beyond a long vacation and that anything you wanted to do with the house was all right with her because, well, after all, you're the older sister.
You spoke to Jessica about it?
You don't mind my speaking to her first, do you? It's only because you weren't here and we wanted to know and... Say, hasn't she blossomed out?
Who?
Jessica! Oh, her 2 years up there didn't do her a bit of harm, did they? She told me it was more like a college than a reform school. I guess she did learn a lot there. I asked her how she felt, you know, about you for having committed her. And she said she'd always remember you for having given her a purpose in life.
Where is she? Jessica. Where
well,
is she?
I heard some hammering from upstairs in your house a few minutes ago, so I guess she must be up there. You won't forget to tell me, will you, about selling the house, I mean?
Jessica?
Perry?
Oh, Helen, how do you feel now? You all right?
I'm fine.
Oh, listen, I've got that airline ticket for France for you. It's a good thing I know somebody with a company. I really had to throw my weight around. Everything is booked right through summer. Well, anyway, you've got your ticket. You sure move fast, don't you, once you've made up your mind? I almost fell out of my chair when Jessica phoned me and told me you were going. Say, it's great her being back, isn't it? Hello?
Yes?
I'm delighted you decided to take a rest. Ought to do your world of good. But why so long? I mean, 2 years abroad for you means 2 years without the best secretary I ever had. What am I...
Jessica! Jessica? Where are you? Why don't you come out? There's no point hiding any longer. I know now that it's you. Jessica! Why did you stay here without letting me know? Why did you insist on trying to send me away? Jessica, answer me! Jessica! All right, Jessica. All right. We'll forget the past. We'll start over. You're welcome to stay here, Jessica, for as long as you like. I sent you away only for your own good. For your own good. Now, please try to understand and believe that. You were wild and bad, and I had to do something, but it's all right now, isn't it? We'll live here together, you and I, won't we? And I won't hurt you, and you won't hurt me either, will you, Jessica? Sister? Where are you? Come out, please. You're frightening me. You wouldn't harm me, Jessica. You wouldn't harm me. It was for your own good. Where are you? You upstairs? Are you upstairs? Don't leave. Don't leave, Jessica. Stay there. I'm coming. I want to explain things to you. I want to explain how they were and how they are now. How did you understand? I don't see you. Where are you? Jessica, please. Please let me see you. Say something to me. Oh, Jessica! Well, all right. I did wrong to send you away. I was wrong. I was jealous of you all the time. You were Papa's favorite and everyone else's, too, and I was jealous. I admit it, you see? You always had all the boys you wanted, and I never had any, and it made me jealous. I'm honest with you, Jessica, and I'm letting you see what's in my heart. Won't you let me know what's in yours? Oh, answer me. Oh, answer me. I know why you stole money, Jessica, and it was my fault. It was mine. I wouldn't let you have any. I wouldn't let you get a job. It was my fault. I know. You took the money and you ran away from me. I was wrong, Jessica. I admit it. I confess it. I was wrong. I'm sorry. Truly, I'm sorry. Oh, Jessica! Are you up there in the attic? Wait there, Jessica. Don't leave. I'm coming up. You'll forgive me, won't you? Say you'll forgive me. If you let me explain, I know you'll forgive me. I'll make it up to you. You'll stay here with me. We'll be together. Are you here? Are you here in the attic, Jessica? Are you here? Jessica! Oh, no, Jessica! No! No, you can't do this! No, you can't lock me up in here! It's like a prison! It's like a prison! 2 years! Oh, 2 years! 2 years! Jessica! I get out of here! Jessica, let me out! You can't do this! You can't keep me locked up in here! Jessica, please! Oh, please! Please, let me out! Please, Jessica!
Perry?
Yes? Jessica?
Perry, Helen has just had what I think is a marvelous idea. She's busy finishing packing, or else she'd tell you herself. Anyway, it is a marvelous idea. That is, if it's all right with you.
What is it, Jessica?
Well, Helen suggests that since she'll be gone 2 years, why don't I take her place with you at the office?
Thank you, Agnes Moorhead, for your third splendid suspense performance this season.
Oh, Miss Moorhead.
Yes, Mr. Wilcox?
Since you've been our guest star on Suspense so often, by now you should be thoroughly familiar with my remarks about Autolite-resistant spark plugs.
Well, I think I am.
And now here again is Agnes Moorhead. Oh, Miss Moorhead. I might tell you that we're asking Radio Mirror Magazine to utilize tonight's story
as they've done with another suspense thriller in their current issue.
I think tonight's play would be wonderful for Radio Mirror. It was a real pleasure to work with the great cast of actors that Tony Leader chose for the night. And I'll be listening next week when Radio's Outstanding Theater Thrills bring you Ralph Edwards in Ghost Hunt. Another gripping study in...
Suspense!
Agnes Moorhead may currently be seen in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, The Stratton Story. Tonight's suspense play was adapted by Walter Newman and Ralph Rose from the story by Virginia Myers, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as Ralph Edwards and Joseph Cotton. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, Radio's Outstanding Theater of Thrills. And next Thursday, same time, hear Ralph Edwards in Ghost Hunt.
You can buy Autolite resistor spark plugs, Autolite electrical parts, Autolite stay full batteries at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from June 16, 1949 on CBS. Star Agnes Moorhead, known as the First Lady of that series, also having a prolific radio career, surprisingly not on air too much in 1949 in only two broadcasts. The one and only prior to Suspense in that year was One Great Hour, where she shared airtime with Roddy McDowell, Gregory Peck, and President Harry Truman in a plea for support for displaced persons of Asia and Europe. And that wraps up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.